Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 297.
This week on the podcast, we interrupt our regularly scheduled Puerto Rico coverage to report on those immigrant children we seem to have forgotten about.
Plus, Rod Rosenstein avoided being whacked in this week's White House HR whack-a-mole.
And the Senate holds hearings to conclusively determine whether men are shit.
Plus, Jeff Flake has his Mr. Smith Goes to Washington moment.
And the internet does some boofing sleuthing.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
Oh, we're laughing right there because that was like take number, well, only like
three.
I think three of that, but it also
it's
took us a while. It took us a while to get through the rundown too.
Yeah,
and I don't know why we have the giggles because
it's the saddest news week in history.
We're certainly right, and we're not even starting with the part that you think that we're going to.
No.
Because that's what we like to, we're trying to keep you on your toes that's here right. At Brain Trust Live.
Recently. It's fall. It's a
that's what
that's
new what we've been
year.
Doing with Puerto Rico, and we're leaving Puerto Rico behind right now to tell you about something just as if not more horrible.
Correct.
That got buried this week because of
what
we're
going
to talk about next.
Right. Exactly. But so in any case, there was this article in the Times that did not get enough. It was, I think it was the lead headline for a brief period, but
sure.
In the midst of the Kavanaugh hearings and what and the fallout from that, it just didn't get the headline it should have.
Yeah.
Which is that, so until now, you know, we have this big issue with like an explosion in undocumented children that are either crossing the border with their parents and getting separated. That was one controversy,
right.
But also that are just crossing unaccompanied or crossing.
Or crossing with someone that parents have basically
right.
hired to get them into
exactly.
the country. Right.
And so. Mostly, these children were being held in facilities that were being managed by, state laws.
Right.
There were these shelters.
Right.
And
we didn't love those facilities.
No.
They weren't great. You know, those were back in the days when we were talking about how we had kids living in cages and such. But,
correct.
Like, most of these facilities, while obviously were not the lap of luxury, like, the kids were getting some form of
schooling
often.
They were being...
They were being outside. They were getting, like, some play. They were being, you know, socialized to the degree that you can there under awful circumstances. I don't want to make it sound like it was like they had a, you know, great, you know,
right.
It was great digs that they were in.
But they were being they were being overseen by the states that they were in. And they were more, you know, in most of these facilities, and not all because we know what was going on at the border, but people were sleeping in rooms of only two or three. I know we saw those facilities with those kids who had been separated from their kids that were in those cages.
Uh-huh.
Most of the facilities that these, because there's something like 13,000 of these kids. Again, not all kids that got separated from their parents, but just all unaccompanied children that are
yeah.
in our custody right now.
Yeah.
Were sleeping in rooms of two or three. They were getting schooling. They were getting legal representation as best as an unaccompanied child can be legally
right.
represented. Not great, but again, better than what's happening now because so there has been a surge in these populations, as we know. We've been talking about that for months. The capacity, we're about like 90% capacity right now at a lot
yeah.
of these shelters. So since May, hundreds of children have been given a few hours notice, like put onto a bus in the middle of the night under the cover of darkness and sent to these temporary shelters in West Texas. So far,
yeah.
1,600 kids have been sent to them. And these are like fucking concentration camps, basically.
Yep.
I mean, they are like, they are like people sleeping 20 to a tent in the middle
yeah,
of
tent cities.
They're tent cities in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
They are not getting schooling in these tent cities. They're being given workbooks that they have no obligation to complete. They are not getting adequate sort of like play and other things that you would hope kids would get.
Right.
There are not adequate services for them. They're not getting adequate
right.
legal representation.
And they're staying there for a long time,
and they're
too.
Staying there for months.
Right. These are meant to be temporary.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I guess 2 months to someone might be temporary, but that's a long time to be living in a tent.
As a child, especially. Two
yeah.
months is like your whole life when you're a kid.
Yeah.
But also, the way that they even describe why the policy is such that they have to grab them in the middle of the night is because they have a big problem with runaways because they're literally like rounding up kids, taking them away from the small amount of normalcy that they've been managed, you know,
yeah.
they've managed to create for themselves in these horrifying shelter
yeah.
environments and putting them into a desert shelter in the middle of nowhere
yeah.
with tons of new kids, no activities, nothing to do, and no one really taking care of any of them.
Yeah.
And so There had been like 100 shelters that these kids were at, but most of them were sort of in the process of being sent to sponsors. And the reason that we're having this problem right now is in part because the harsh Trump rhetoric has resulted in way fewer sponsors being willing to take in kids because right. a lot of sponsors are undocumented themselves.
Right.
And yes. they have started arresting sponsors when they apply because they find them to be undocumented. And that includes people that are not, have no crime, in, you know, have not committed any crimes or anything like
yeah.
that. So we, like, when we think about, because this sort of emergency housing policy was actually created under Obama, but I don't think it was intended to be used as a long-term method of housing children. And yeah. also, when you think about why the harsh Trump rhetoric matters in this situation, because obviously we were not fans of Obama's immigration policy, so we
right.
are not here to tell you that that was perfect.
No.
We are here Certainly to tell wasn't. You that when you add what we thought was already an imperfect immigration policy to the harsh rhetoric that prevents families from coming forward to take in undocumented kids who are living in concentration camp-like situations in the middle of a tent city in the desert, who have been ripped away from even the
yeah.
the temporary home that they had in some shelter somewhere else where at least they were only
yep.
3 to a room instead of 20.
Yeah.
We're going to tell you that's not acceptable.
No, it's not. And that rhetoric matters. You know, this is one example of it, but it, you know, it matters in really across the board because, you know, these people are undocumented people are, they're more afraid to try and get jobs. They're more afraid to sign up for services. I know that my parents were working on a volunteer thing where they were doing hearing tests and fitting people for hearing
right.
aids and things. People stopped coming, so they were like literally stopping, like, getting healthcare for themselves.
Yeah.
It's just like, and it was just because, you know, they were scared, and that's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I mean, like, he is, you know, stupid in many respects, but I think gets what he's doing here.
Obviously. But yeah. I mean, gets what he's doing in the way
in
that he
way.
Can get
right,
the people
exactly.
around him get what he's doing.
right. Yeah.
But I mean, this is just, we were already horrified by what the conditions that we were keeping children in before,
right.
you know, we started this policy. And we started this back in May, so this has been
right.
going on for a while. This is not the first time
we need to get
situations.
Re-horrified.
But the idea that we are now moving kids from other facilities to these tent cities
yep.
who have been settled in other facilities under the cover of darkness in the middle of the night
so they don't run away.
Is extra horrifying. And also...
Yeah.
So they're saying that they're only moving kids who are close to getting placed with a sponsor to
yeah,
these facilities. But the problem is the sponsor program takes a really long time to vet people. So they're saying it's going to be like, oh, they'll only be there for a month or two, but they actually don't know
if they
are going to end
yeah.
up being there
and
for longer than that.
And they don't know who's close and who's not. Like,
of course
I
not.
I mean, we know that this is like a...
They've lost half the kids.
I was
so going
to
you
say,
know,
there's no organization to any of this, which is tragic. But
this is like really us... loading kids on buses under the cover of darkness that are already in-state facilities for
yeah.
no through no fault of their own, because they are children.
Right.
Whatever they did is no fault of their own.
Right.
Even if they broke the law by coming across the border illegally, that's not a fault of theirs.
Right.
We're going to put them on buses under the cover of darkness and, like, send them with a snack to the desert.
Yeah, that's what we're going to do.
To a tent where they have no schooling. Also, what are we supposed to do... when some of these kids inevitably either become Americans or go back to where they come from, but they've had gaps in schooling now because we sent them to fucking tents in the desert and couldn't bother putting them in school.
Yeah.
I mean, this has so many consequences beyond just the terror that you would experience and the PTSD that you would have from,
yeah.
you know, from being in a facility
yeah.
like that, because
yeah.
it's also interrupted their schooling. It's interrupted their social development. It's they're already in a terrible situation. Like, it's just... it's bonkers.
Yeah.
And we're as mad about it as we were about the Puerto Rico hurricane response.
Right.
So there's going to be some combination of Puerto
keeping
Rico
track
updates
of these kids.
And keeping track of these kids going forward as our
yeah.
lead story.
Yeah.
Even though it's election season and really we're an electoral politics podcast. But whatever.
Right.
It's important. In any
it
case,
is.
Getting on to the news of the week, though,
it was
like
crazy.
Whack-a-mole.
Like, we live through a week where the... a deputy attorney general who is overseeing whether our president like colluded with a foreign government to win an election or not was almost either fired or forced to resign or offered to resign or whatever. And that news got gobbled up in a way that like was nothing. And like, that is, That's crazy. Like, that's crazy. That was the week this week.
Yeah. This week has been a moment.
Yes.
We had a moment this week.
We did.
A national moment. We had a moment of history.
Yeah.
Which is, I feel like this is like the, this is, I think, in many ways more formative even than those Anita Hill hearings were, because I feel like this is the week that all of that Me Too work kind of came to a head in addition to this historic moment happening.
Yeah.
It's like the week that the like angry white man clapped back.
Yeah.
And it's been fascinating to watch, also terrifying.
Yes.
It's, well, we've all been of two minds because it was also great television.
I mean, it was riveting.
If Donald Trump cares about anything, it's ratings, and he, right. they got them.
He got them. Yeah.
This was and that's, we literally didn't even include Donald Trump's crazy press conference on our rundown because that's like irrelevant at this point.
Oh my God, I forgot about that until right now.
I mean, how could
moment.
You have remembered?
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's not even relevant anymore to the news because all it was a crazy, it was a crazy press conference
I
where
know.
He like rambled about nothing for an hour and a half or something crazy.
Yeah.
And all that we can say about it, we can't, there are no takeaways from that. All we can say about it is it was crazy. Like there's nothing to take away from that.
Yeah.
But, the Kavanaugh hearings happened on Thursday.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the world didn't exist before Thursday.
Right. And nothing outside of these hearings in the world existed on Thursday.
Or since, really. It's really all that there's been.
Yeah.
All of America tuned in. I've actually never lived as an adult through a hearing, a nationwide hearing watching that way.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like in history.
Because we were live for Anita Hill.
And my parents watched it and I was there, but I don't really remember it that well because we were always watching
hearings. You certainly couldn't process it politically.
No. Yeah. And like, you know, I mean, I've been alive for a lot of hearings that we've watched all the way through and I know that we've watched a lot of hearings, but like, I would say that the last time that hearings were this heavily watched in my, you know, that I'm conscious of is like Watergate. You know, like this felt like Watergate hearing style because it was like everyone I know watched.
I was going to say, and it's all anyone was talking about. It was all anyone talked about on social media. It was all, you know, we were just walking back from getting coffee and like people were talking about it in their yard with someone on speakerphone
who was doing yard work.
He did it. Like, you know, I was just having like a casual conversation. I got my hair cut at like a, what is like mostly like kind of like a, you know, like a
men's
barbershop kind of situation. And like everybody was talking about it there. I mean, it was just like you couldn't go. I mean, it's all that's on anybody's mind.
Yeah. It's all anyone's talking about.
Yeah.
And we're here to tell you, not exactly, you know, not the whole thing, because obviously you probably watched it.
You can't. Yeah. Well,
but
right. Exactly.
We're here to make some remarks about what happened.
Yeah.
The first being that the Republicans made a big misstep early in this process.
Yes.
Because, as you recall, they decided not to question Blasey Ford themselves.
Yes.
And instead hired Rachel Mitchell, a female prosecutor, to do the questioning.
That's right.
And that backfired big time.
Immediately.
Because as soon as her testimony was over, everyone was like, well, this is done.
Well,
like, it went so badly.
It went so badly. And it was just because it wasn't through any fault of hers, I don't think. Just because I think that she was like trying to, she was basically sort of like going on a lengthy fact-finding.
Well, they were trying to build a case that the Democrats had paid for this case to become a scandal. Like, they were trying to build a case that the Democrats were behind this accusation.
Yeah.
And so she was trying to talk about, oh, who paid for your polygraph and who, you know, and all of that.
But she could just
who recommended your lawyers.
She could just never get enough, like,
time.
She couldn't get enough time. She couldn't get, like, a pace going where she, you know, she would have 5 minutes and then a Democrat would basically make a speech.
Right.
And, like, but to talk about sexual assault and, you know, like, I mean, so she was getting raked over the coals, like, by the media and also, like, Republicans. Mm-hmm. Apparently, like, people were, like, not happy with her. I was shocked that she came back to do any questioning of Kavanaugh.
Well, and that was short-lived.
But that was super short-lived. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was, you know, and I had thought this to myself before they hired her because I always thought that was stupid. And my question was always like, can't they just choose to not be assholes to her?
No.
But then after watching all however many hours of it was, Yes, the answer was clearly no. There was no way that they were ever going to be able to do that. So, like, on some level, maybe it was the right thing to do.
Right.
Because
they had no win. There was no way to win that one for
because
them.
Because they couldn't. They there was their inability to be anything other than wretched humans to all people,
right.
But specifically women. But I mean, you know, children and men also.
Yes.
Of all shapes and sizes and colors.
Everyone out there.
But, like, you know.
Came through
how
real
it came
clearly.
It came through real clearly in
their
a way
silence
that it
somehow
was just
made it
like,
come through.
How, and it also I think was it was problematic. You know, they kept it was the dichotomy of the Democrats questioning her and then apologizing to her for what she's had to go through and what her family has had to go through, and the Republicans not getting a chance to do that. Now, Chuck Grassley did. Do it at the beginning of the of the hearing, but then for them to basically take the questioning back over from her of Kavanaugh
just so they can compliment him,
and then apologize to him for what he and his family are going through. Like that dichotomy was just so like it just felt
icky.
So icky and slimy because it's just like you just had a woman who you have all claimed. Think probably was sexually assaulted. I mean, like, none of them are necessarily calling her liars. They're just like, we don't think it was Kavanaugh. Like, something happened to her. Like, you know, we feel
right.
bad.
How can we know what it is?
But they never got to say it to her because they hired someone to speak for them.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get that person who actually may or may not have sexually assaulted her out there, it was like, oh, what you have had to endure over the last 2 weeks.
They felt very bad.
It's just so
horrific. Couldn't say
horrific.
Enough about that.
Yeah. It's like... I mean,
well,
guys.
In her case, also, they really suffered from the fact that she was basically like her own best expert witness because
well, I know
she I mean,
well, I know they kept asking her about like whether she like could have misremembered. And it was like, well, no, because the melatonin and the serotonin like goes into your hippocampus and then it becomes
right,
frozen there. And then it becomes
science.
I mean, like, yeah, she's like a doctor of psychology. So she knows how the memory of him sexually assaulting her ended up in her brain scientifically. So she wasn't having any of this, like, did you forget or could it have been someone else? She's like, no, it's in my brain and I know how it got there.
Yeah. And she was also very honest about things she didn't remember versus
yes.
what she did. And that was a big contrast to him who claimed he remembered everything but wouldn't answer any questions. He dissembled the whole time.
Right.
And lied also from the stand. Here are some highlights.
Yeah.
First of all, he was a rude prick to everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, and that includes, like... His opening testimony was so wacky to watch because he veered wildly between screaming and crying in a way that made him seem like a giant overgrown baby.
Yeah. Well, and I get what he was trying to do in the sense that I think that everyone was telling him, and he also probably felt himself, that the only way to, if he was going to do this hearing at all and keep his nomination in there, is if he really vehemently fought back in a way that would make people believe that it wasn't him, like, just by really fighting. Because, like, if you're not really going to fight in this instance, like, you really just should be probably withdrawing your name. Because, like, you are about to go out there in front of, like, all of the world and have to say that you didn't do this. So he was trying to be forceful. Now, I'm not giving him a pass at all because clearly his forceful allowed us to...
Picture how this could have happened.
To picture him sexually assaulting women.
Yeah.
Because it was so ragey and anger-filled.
And self-pity-filled.
And self-pity-filled and had, like, you know, weird rage, like, nose snortling and, you know, and red-faced. Like, I mean, he also, like, you're like, you know, I mean, he talked a lot about how much he liked beer, but you could see it on, you could see it on his damn face.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, he just came off as, like, a person who obviously has both drank too much and sexually assaulted too much.
Yeah. The two things. And you could see it also in the way that he reacted to questions that were relevant to the case. Like, that exchange with Amy Klobuchar, where she asked him if he likes what he likes to drink or something like that. And he was like, well, what do you like to drink? What do you get drunk on? And
Also, right after Amy Klobuchar had discussed how her father was
an alcoholic.
That
was actually so bad that he went on a break and had to apologize
when he came back.
But the apology was bullshit because having that reaction already indicates that you're not...
Well, and also she was like, how many beers is too many beers? And he was like, however many the chart says on blood alcohol level, as if he's got a freaking chart in front of him. Yeah. Like every night he goes out to have a beer to like know what, like he's doing math on, oh, well, I had dinner an hour ago and I've had seven beers since then. And, you know, I have three ladies to assault later. How much is too much to drink?
All of this was in an effort to claim that he's never blacked out from drinking. And here's the thing about blacking out from drinking. Yeah. You're the only one who doesn't know what happened.
I was going to say, I had an event last night that I worked at and I definitely had too many glasses of wine and I made it home safely. I took a Lyft and I came home, and this morning I woke up and I was like, I don't remember walking the dog last night. Like, clearly I did because it was just the thing that happened. Like, I had to find my keys this morning because I was like, who knows where I put those? Yeah. Like, there were a lot of details, and I don't even really think that I was like shit can last night.
Right.
You just, your brain doesn't work while you're drinking too many beers.
That's so true.
That's the nature of drinking beers.
When the one thing that everyone will corroborate is that he's a violent and aggressive drunk.
That's right.
Like.
Right. Yeah, that's the only bit of any of their stories that is corroborated.
Correct. Like, he also, though.
Yeah. He corroborated in himself.
Exactly. He also opened, with that opening statement, he went into like searing criticism of the Clintons going after him and the Democrats going after him. This is a man who is supposed to impartially rule on matters that will be brought before him that affect policy that is partisan.
Yeah, that I think was that was a mistake.
A judge should know better.
Yeah.
And that's, again, I know this, the news has reminded us of this, but probably not enough. This wasn't a trial to find out whether or not he did this. No. It was about his character and whether he has character befitting of a Supreme Court justice.
Right.
Whether or not he did this, his performance on that day raised some red flags.
Yeah.
Just a few. Uh-huh. He also lied about a sex act being a drinking game and also another sex act being a fun activity that involved barfing or something. I can't remember. But literally made up rules to a drinking game called Devil's Triangle, which is a,
like, you put three cups in a, and it's like quarters and there's dice
in him actually asking a United States senator if they knew the game quarters. The whole thing was very much like him describing an 80s movie him being the popular jock. He kept talking about going to Squee and Tobin's house.
I was like, you know what, let's say he didn't sexually assault anyone,
right?
Let's say he wasn't a horrible partisan. I don't want somebody on the Supreme Court who was like weightlifting with Squee.
No,
after
exactly.
School.
No,
like that. I mean,
that's we
are. I'm only partially kidding.
He's literally a villain from an 80s teen movie, right. And he described with accuracy exactly what qualities
how
it would
villainous
take to
he
be.
Was.
Yeah, exactly. Like it was just it was his and also I think because I think we're going to talk in a little bit about the sort of visceral reaction that I think a lot of women had to him, but I think a lot of men did too, because he's exactly the guy that makes you make a bad decision because you feel like he's bullying men sexually assault women.
We're going to talk soon about, how threatened women felt by watching this. I think a lot
but you had high school bullies too. Everyone did.
I was going to say, a lot of men, certainly gay men, can easily see him, you know, shoving me into a locker.
Of course.
Somewhere.
Even if you're not sort of pushing you to do something you're not comfortable with a woman too.
Right.
You know, like that's the kind of guy that bullies you into making bad choices yourself. Yeah. And everyone could see that.
Yeah.
He also mischaracterized the eyewitness accounts that do exist at the party. A lot of people who were theoretically at the party say that they don't remember it.
And he kept saying they had denied it.
Yeah, right. That it happened. And that includes her best friend.
Right.
At the time. And
who has issued a statement since then. And she was like, I'm not saying that this didn't happen. I don't personally remember it happening.
There's a lot of high school parties that I wasn't sexually assaulted at and have therefore forgotten.
Yeah.
There are also moments in my life that are inconsequential, but I was sexually assaulted in some way, and I remember them perfectly.
Right.
You know, like, there is a reason that a random bystander at this party, which was just a casual gathering of people in high school, might not remember it 35 years later or whatever.
Yeah.
He got bested at one point by Dick Durbin, which is unforeseen. I didn't know Dick Durbin was going to be the place where it all happened.
They put him
early because he wasn't even going to be a closer. Kamala Harris was the closer. Like, Dick Durbin somehow got him early on by just saying, okay, if you're willing to do this investigation.
He kept saying, I'm willing to do anything.
Yeah, and he was like, okay, then tell Dom again you want an FBI investigation.
Right.
And he wouldn't do it.
No, and not only did he not do it, he had such an uncomfortable silence where he basically just like glared back at Dick Durbin. And like
finally, and also Dick, finally, him.
Yeah, and finally Dick Durbin was like, are you just not going to answer me?
Yeah.
Because he literally just like stared at him like stone faced.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, that silence is going to be remembered.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it was also the silence that prompted Lindsey Graham's pearl clutching moment, which is the most famous moment of the whole hearing.
Yeah.
And actually, to his credit, totally changed the dynamic of the hearing to work in Kavanaugh's favor, because that's why after the hearing was finished, there was about 2 hours of positive coverage of it where people were like, he held his own pretty well. And it wasn't until everyone went back and looked at the footage and remembered how crazy he'd been at the beginning and also how credible Blasey Ford had been at her hearing that they were like, oh, wait a minute. Because what Lindsey Graham did is go on a 10-minute screed about how unfair all of this was.
Yeah.
No one knows why he's so upset, but whatever. But, like, did it in the most theatrical Lindsey Graham-esque way.
Yeah.
And so it kind of shifted the tone of the hearings because everyone was like, what the fuck? And it was also when they started questioning him themselves instead of letting Rachel Mitchell
That's what I was going to say. And that is, I think that he was miscalculated on a couple different levels.
I agree,
Because besides the fact that it was just so insane and he's, like, getting, you know, all of this shit for how, like, pearl clutchy it was and, like, Southern, like, oh, my dear.
The fainting couch was made reference to many times.
but, for one, it was when they completely just unannounced decided that the woman that they had hired to do the questioning was not cutting it.
Yeah. Well, women
it was
suck
Lindsey
at
Graham. It was
stuff.
What it was. She. It would have been.
Women are
Miss,
bad. At
it
things.
Would have been Miss Mitchell's turn.
Yeah.
To question
yeah,
when Lindsey Graham
in.
When he broke in. And the other thing that I think was a miscalculation on his part, and it I don't know if people like process it this way, but I certainly did. He really gave up the game. In
yes,
that
he announced the whole strategy.
He announced the whole strategy in the sense that like he thought the whole thing was a sham and it wasn't even over yet.
Yeah.
So. Basically, they never had any intention of actually hearing her or taking away from her anything that was going to get them to a no on his nomination. Because the whole thing was a sham, so why are we even doing this anyway?
And he announced in the middle of his screed that he was going to vote for him anyway.
Yeah.
He believes him. He's going to vote for him anyway. So the hearing wasn't over yet.
Correct.
It wasn't yet time to decide if you believed him or not.
Right.
He hadn't been asked any questions.
No.
Like...
Lindsey Graham probably could have gone on the same tirade the day before the hearings.
Yeah, I probably did. He went on a similar tirade between the hearings.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, Lindsey Graham is having some rage issues about this, which is kind of just curious to me because Lindsey Graham is exactly the guy that got beaten up by this guy in high school.
Totally.
Like, I mean, to a T.
Well, but that's why he wants to, he can.
He's finally in with
you
him.
Know, that's, there it is.
This is all.
Everybody wants the
end. Solve the locker room, you guys.
With the popular douchey bully.
Yeah. That's Lindsey Graham is like living his best high school self right now, but doing it in a way that only gets you made fun of ultimately.
Yeah.
Because the sort of Southern lady fainting aspect of all of this was too hard to ignore. But also, by this point, 5 women had come forward. Only 3 were mentioned in the hearings because I think the other 2 are anonymous.
One of them being a client of Michael Avenatti,
which is
I'm here for.
That's Deborah Ramirez, right? She was somebody who said that Kavanaugh assaulted her freshman year at Yale. And then there's this other woman, Julie Sweetnick. Or Swetnick, who says, she does not claim that Kavanaugh or Judge, because Mark Judge is also a conversation here where they, the reason that they want to do the investigation is to talk to him, and Kavanaugh's like, well, he said he doesn't know anything.
Yeah.
And it's like, no one's asked him. He just preemptively said he doesn't want to deal with it. But he is Nobody a man who has written a book that parallels this exact incident with Bart O'Kavanaugh as the main character, so he is someone worth talking to.
Right, yeah. And also, I think Blasey Ford did brought up the interesting point of that she would be able to narrow down when this was by when he worked at the
supermarket
because she saw him not long after it and it was, she said it was like a very uncomfortable as it would be.
It would be,
But so there's other details that they're going to be able to pull from him even if he's not necessarily willing to speak on the exact incident because obviously he's not going to be like, yeah, we did it. Like, that's probably not what he's up
to. Yeah, I helped try to rape somebody.
Right, exactly. But I mean, there's still information to be had beyond him being like, well, I didn't do it.
Exactly. And this woman says that she was basically gang raped at a party that Kavanaugh and Judge were both at. She doesn't accuse them of doing it, but says this is in line with the kind of behavior she witnessed from them. And right. that she was at parties where she saw Kavanaugh, quote, consistently engage in excessive drinking and inappropriate contact of a sexual nature with women during the early 1980s.
Yeah. And isn't that the one that was on the, wasn't that on a boat?
Oh, yeah. I think that was the boat party.
The boat party?
There's, yeah, Ramirez says he exposed himself to her.
Oh.
That's the one where we have to picture his penis just coming just into her face.
Right.
Yeah.
But that was, as soon as I heard about the one that was on, I didn't even need the details of what happened on a boat in Newport. I just knew that that sounded right.
Yep. It immediately tracked. All of these stories have immediately tracked.
Right, exactly.
So there was a very swift and palpable social media reaction among women to Kavanaugh's testimony.
Sure.
As you might expect.
It was terrifying.
It was terrifying. It was exactly what an abusive spouse does. I say based on movies, I guess. But he was trying to gaslight us the whole time.
Yeah.
He was trying to be like, no, women aren't credible. Believe me, because and you're ruining my life in the process. And, you know, it was like
right.
a self-pity fest
yep.
where he lied about what he had done. And yep. then got enraged about the lie and then cried about it.
Yeah.
Which is like exactly what someone does. I think someone pointed out on Twitter, I've seen men have a reaction to this after smashing my head through a glass table too. Like, you know, like this is exactly what you do when you're trying to
yeah.
cover up for the fact that you have done something wrong and
sure.
you won't admit it.
Yeah.
And it was so obvious and his unpredictability was so threatening. Because that's
yeah.
the thing, that's the miscalculation I think they made about how he presented himself. I think to men who are Trump voters,
yeah.
like those kind of men,
yeah.
it maybe came across as righteous indignation.
Sure.
But to any woman watching,
yeah.
it was exactly the kind of threatening behavior that you work your whole life to avoid.
I'm sure.
And it's and in many women's cases don't successfully avoid.
Sure.
But like the sort of unpredictable nature of his anger, the fact
yeah.
that he kept swinging between self-pity and tears, because it was
oh, yeah.
John Boehner style
and shooting
crying.
Questions back at
yeah
at,
angrily
you know,
shooting questions
and,
back at people.
Yeah.
But I said to Brent while we were watching it, he's just like John Boehner. He only cries about the impossibility of his own success and then like his own downfall. Like
yeah.
he only can cry about the things as they pertain to him.
Right.
But he can't empathize
empathy. Right.
with mm-hmm. anyone else.
Right.
And that feels problematic if you're a woman watching that testimony and if you're just a person who can
right.
think watching that testimony.
Right. Or for a person who is going to be a judge.
Yes, exactly.
Or who is a judge. I mean, he is a judge.
It's like the kind of behavior that you are on guard for all day as a woman. And I've noticed there's been a lot of conversations, and we were talking about this even on the way here.
Yeah.
Because we were at a Starbucks before this, and this
yeah.
this guy who, like a homeless guy, walked in and looked me up and down as he walked by me. And
yeah.
I was saying to Brent, you know, pre-Thursday, I probably wouldn't have even told you that, because that happens
yeah.
to me all the time.
Sure.
And I'm not walking around in a fucking bathing suit
no.
today. I mean, it's hot out. I'm wearing shorts and a tank top, but I'm not
right.
exactly flaunting myself. But I mean,
yeah. you weren't asking for
well,
it.
Well, of course not. And no one ever is. But my point
know.
Is, like, it's
I'm
not.
I'm just being sarcastic.
Yeah. No, but I mean, but like, it was, it's the kind of thing that happens to you so often as a woman that you don't say it
yeah.
anymore because you're just like, oh,
sure.
I got
right,
looked up and down yeah. by some rando today at the whatever. And
yeah.
like, since.
But
this,
that sort of culture where that happens and then no one says anything about it is how you get Brett
exactly.
Kavanaugh.
Exactly. And that's, I was saying, since Thursday, I've heard so many discussions about just people mentioning those little moments and also mentioning the little ways that women have to adapt to being in an environment that is made to make them fearful all the time. That includes how we walk down the street,
sure.
how we, I always have an escape route planned, essentially, for wherever
yep.
they are,
yep.
wherever we are, how I will go out of my way to avoid a block that only has one man walking on it because
yep.
I don't fucking know who he is. And, like, the fact that I can't walk alone at night in this city.
Yeah.
Like, the things like that that I think
yeah.
are limitations to just your mobility as a woman.
Yeah.
Like, those kinds of conversations, because of the kind of threat that he created on the stand, were so palpable that we just started talking about it since
yeah.
then. Like the,
yeah.
the social media reaction and the just conversational reaction has been wild.
Yeah.
Because I've seen two men talk about it since then.
So have I.
Yeah. That's never happened in my life,
no.
you know? But like these are things that he was so on brand for.
Oh, yeah.
That it was like, oh, I see what you're talking about. You know, like if you are somebody who doesn't experience those fears in your life because
yeah.
you don't have to, you were able to finally be like, oh,
yeah, exactly.
I know what you mean.
I think he really put a face on all
He put
of that.
A face on the constant intimidation of women that exists all throughout society. And for that, I think they will all be sorry.
Yeah.
Because I know that
and I
they
love
may...
how he kept talking about like how great he was with like hiring women too, which I didn't think was very smart for him to bring up because like we also got that report that he wanted them all to look the same.
Well, and he kept talking about how he was getting supportive text messages from his female friends.
Oh yeah.
And I was like, here's another problem that women are realizing is that they are complicit in this behavior a lot of the time too. We have made excuses for our male friends a lot.
Oh, sure.
And that conversation had also never happened, really.
Well, and,
I've been having it with everyone.
Well, and I also thought that was, like, that's just so ridiculous, too, because, like, he was just using that to try and
show. Strategy he's been trying this whole time.
Right, like, that's just, like, you know, what, you know, that's the same as, you know, Donald Trump being like, I have a black friend.
Yeah.
You know,
I literally texted to a friend.
It's
I was like, oh, so he has a black friend.
Ann Coulter has a gay friend.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we... Sure, like you can have, you know, a lady friend and then also do, you know, be a lady sexual assaulter.
Sexual right?
those
assault.
Two, you can do both of those things.
Can come
at the
in
same
any
time.
Combination. You can not assault 200 women and only assault one. You can assault 200 women and only and not assault
the friend one.
Any combination right. is possible.
That's
you
right.
know,
yeah.
any of
the letters in the world that you were nice to women. Doesn't disprove that you once did this.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, that's, I think that argument, which is what they came in with, I mean, that was what they started this conversation themselves.
They did.
We did not start this conversation. They started it, and they started it by presenting letters from women saying that he wasn't a predator, basically.
Yeah.
And then we all had to be like, are you, though?
I know.
But, like, the fact that he continued that method in this testimony where he... kept, instead of answering questions, announcing that he had female friends.
Yeah.
Was laughable because that is a literal cliche of privilege.
Yeah.
That is, we already have a cliche about saying, I have a black friend.
Yeah.
We talk about it. We joke about it all the time
joke.
As a society.
Yeah.
Like,
it's not a funny joke.
It's not a funny joke. But I mean, it's a joke we all know.
Right. Yeah.
It's not, like, that's what he was doing this whole time. That was his only defense.
Yeah.
Was that he liked to weightlift at Squeeze House or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
And also, the names of his friends made them sound like they were out of an 80s movie anyway. And I was like, I can't care about what happens to you.
The whole hearing actually really did sort of like, I mean, obviously I know there's like another world out there that like rich people exist in.
Yeah.
But like it really, because even her testimony was just sort of like, well, I probably got there because I was at the country club practicing diving earlier in the day. And it's like, it's not what people are doing. But anyway, this is not really relevant to the story.
Because I was talking about it with my parents, and we noticed that her accusation is the only one that comes from someone of the same economic class as him. And I think that's why it's important that she came forward.
I agree.
Debbie Ramirez was not from a wealthy family. She was from a working class family, and she was at Yale. And of course, she was too fucking scared to say anything because...
Yeah.
Who was going to believe her over this guy?
Yeah.
You know? I think that Blasey Ford did a great service because she is someone who can say in the language of that social environment what happened and articulate it as wrong in a way that someone who just doesn't have the same social leverage that this guy has wouldn't have been taken as seriously because of.
True. You're right.
And so there is like a real classist element to this story.
Because
that's why her story has to be the primary story. I think that's to their fault, though, because... Then they had to have the one expert witness in psychology be the victim of the story. Like, that was a crazy miscalculation. Like, you know, they're not going to be able to as easily vilify her because she understands the tools they're using.
Yeah.
But it just, there is an element to which this all happening this all happening within that social class also shows that rich Republican women should also care.
Yeah.
Like, it gave everyone an opportunity to sort of be like, oh, this happens in my world, too. Because this is famous behavior of rich white guys all over the place.
Oh,
but
sure.
Usually they pick on people who are disempowered in a way where they can't say anything.
Yeah.
And so to have somebody who is in that world come forward is actually, like, kind of a big moment, I think, because this is what Washington is like, too, by the way. These guys just go and become senators or whatever, and then they're in Washington together.
Yeah,
the reason that no one can empathize with her and everyone can empathize with him on the Republican side of that panel...
because they're all
if they aren't that guy.
Right, I was going to say, perhaps not to the extent.
Right.
But I mean, like, they're all the people who, like...
They're children of privilege who,
right.
you know, they're white men. They now have power. They, you know, they have used that power at times inappropriately and to and they already have empathy trouble because they're Republicans. But, I mean, like... To say that he did this is in some ways to an admission of their own guilt, and that's why this hearing could never have happened for them the way it should have. That's why Lindsey Graham could just get up and announce that he already knew what he thought, because he can't actually consider this.
No.
He's witnessed too much of this behavior to consider that this could be true. That would upend his whole worldview.
Yeah.
And we're saying that about the one guy on that committee who probably hasn't sexually assaulted that many women.
Right. Yes.
But so in any case... Friday stayed exciting
because it did, I know.
Then Jeff Flake had a last minute turnaround where they decided they were going to jam this vote through. And
it was so exciting too, because there was all of this like just like coming and going in that
secret meeting room.
And there's like all these pictures of like Dianne Feinstein like standing outside talking to Lisa Murkowski, who was like who's not even on that panel on that committee. Yeah. Like, so obviously there was like shit going down, and you could see it, and it was just like playing out, and you couldn't tell what it was, and like all the networks were like, "What's going on? There's commotion."
At the moment they were supposed to take the vote, so we had all tuned in to watch them take the vote,
right?
And then it was like Jeff Flake's left the room, and Lisa Murkowski's outside, and I was like, "Why is she here? What's going on? Like, what's happening?"
Right.
And then like people kept coming and going, and the only three people who sat there the whole time were Chuck Grassley, Lindsey Graham, and
probably Mike Lee or maybe Ted Cruz.
What's his face? The other guy who sits between them. Can't even remember.
Kennedy?
Crowley?
Kennedy? I mean,
no, it wasn't Kennedy. Anyway, that's not important.
Yeah.
Three Republicans.
One of the Mormons
was sitting there. And so.
Orrin Hatch.
There we are.
Got it.
I was like, it's a guy. We know him. It's a famous.
Oh, by the way, Orrin Hatch thinks that Christine Blasey Ford has.
She's attractive.
Attractive. Yes, yeah. She was an attractive lady. Witness.
Yes.
So.
Thank God we have his seal of approval on that.
Yeah.
But so what ended up happening, which continued to be fascinating, because it seemed like Jeff Flake was about to turn on them, and he sort of did. But he used it as a tactic to get this through committee, which was fascinating to watch and sneaky as fuck.
But once they were all there, they were going to obviously vote that through committee because it was 11-10 and everybody was going to vote on party line. So on some level, like, he still did do a good thing, obviously. But I mean, like...
Well, I think the reason he did it that way was in part that he needed...
Those votes were cooked before he did anything.
He needed backing of Collins and Murkowski to say, reason I'm holding this up is you guys don't have the votes.
Yes, exactly. And that's what... I think there was a lot of panic initially, because what he did was, like, obviously, that we're now into this, you know, week-long FBI investigation. And what he did was basically be like, I will vote yes if...
There's an FBI investigation,
but everybody was sort of like, well, if you're the only no, then...
Just say no here.
Well, just you're say no here, and also...
That's what Dianne Feinstein thought he was going to do, too.
Well, that's what she thought he was going to do. Yeah, there was a lot of confusion on the Democrat side, because I think that they thought... Well, she was super confused, because she kept asking about, like, amendments, and I think she thought they were passing, like, a law in there. I mean, the saddest part of the whole thing is after the entire vote was over and everybody was leaving, and Dianne Feinstein just like remained sitting there, like asking questions of Chuck Grassley, like, whose, you know, combined age between the two of them is like 312.
Yeah.
Like, what had just happened?
Yeah. I mean,
it was just sort of like...
People kept having to explain, because you literally heard her in the mic say what just happened.
Yeah. Like, it's like, what did we vote for? Was there an amendment? Whereas it was like, no, there was not an amendment. You just voted on whether you were...
And to be fair... They should have made a promise that was actually meaningful about this FBI investigation in the committee, because part of why she was so frustrated, I think, was that she had understood that they were going to vote no and then have an FBI investigation. And instead, they not only voted yes right out from under them, like immediately as soon as they sat down, but then also they made no real meaningful promise, because all they could say is, well, it'll be up to Senate leadership.
Right. But I felt like I... I felt like I was calming multiple people down at that time, because, like, not that, you know, if there's one person who I felt like would maybe be like halfway good for his word, it was Jeff Flake. And I assumed that if he was offering this up as a thing, it was because he knew that he had the votes to harpoon the thing. And that, within probably the half hour, I think, we found out that that was indeed the case.
Yeah.
And that's obviously what Lisa Murkowski was doing hanging around there that morning.
Harpooning things.
Right, exactly.
She's harpooning.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a swift and dramatic close to the begin to the hearing process, and a swift and dramatic beginning to a faulty investigation that's underway right now.
Yeah, that's right. Because the FBI investigation is obviously happening now because it's only a week long, but we don't know what's happening because apparently not much is going to be allowed to happen.
Yeah. A lot of things are going to be not under consideration in this investigation. The White House has kind of limited the scope of it.
Yeah.
That includes his drinking history, which they can't ask about, even though it's literally vital to ascertaining whether or not he can be believed in his account.
Right. The one thing that I will say about that is that I think that we can, from his already given testimony, assume that he's fairly close to a drunk.
Yeah. And he loves beer.
And he has said specifically that he has drank too much beer on occasion.
Yes.
So, I mean, like, it would be nice to maybe sort of, like, really dig into what that drinking history looks like. But I think that we can all, the FBI should be able to work under the assumption that he's a drunk.
There are a lot of eyewitness accounts of him behaving inappropriate manner while drunk.
Right.
So the fact that they're not going to ask anyone else to corroborate his account is problematic because he's obviously underplaying how drunk he is.
Right.
And, you know, Don McGahn is in charge of it. So, like,
grim. Yeah.
And they have spoken to Deborah Ramirez, the second accuser. So we do know that they did that. They're not speaking to Ford or Kavanaugh.
Okay.
Guess they figure they've done that. But they are going to speak to Mark Judge. That's the really important one.
Yeah.
And also Patrick Smith and Leland Kaiser, who are also people.
Right. Patrick Smith is PJ, who was there was discussion of at this hearing. Yeah.
And who's Leland? I think they mentioned. Or
Leland is her. No, Leland is her best friend.
Oh, Leland. Right. Okay. Right, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, so not talking to Squee. Who's Squee?
I don't know.
Squee is my favorite character in all of this because he kept saying it with a straight face, and I was like,
"That was
no,
I know." They kept,
when he was purposely dissembling because he didn't want to use their actual names because that would have corroborated some of her story.
He said as much.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah,
because he was asked who they were, and he kept not saying.
Yeah,
it's the testimony was weird because he is a person who theoretically understands the law,
right?
And like, could not fashion a smart lawyer argument out of his box at all. Like, I feel like I would have done a better job not answering their questions than he did. Just basically understanding that keeping my mouth shut was about as important as as it was. Like,
well, and that was the thing. The fact that she knew, she didn't go to school with him.
Right.
So the fact that she knew these players in his life certainly doesn't prove assault.
No.
But it does prove that there was interaction in a way that she knew the people that he was running with as... even though that they were basically sort of like in separate worlds.
Yeah.
I mean, they were in the same sort of rich person world.
Right.
But they were
in different schools.
But they were in separate, you know, groups.
Yeah.
And so I agree with you. Like, that's why he was sort of like half corroborating her story by like mentioning anyone named PJ because she said that someone named PJ was there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, exactly. Meanwhile, Lindsey Graham has been hitting the news this week with my favorite series of comments because the best thing about all of this is in an attempt to make the charges seem insane, they keep referring to this gang rape situation. They keep saying gang rape. All these Republicans are constantly talking all week they've been talking about gang rape.
As if it's just too implausible.
Right. And that's because when white people do it, we don't call it that. But it is the same thing as gang rape. Like, that's, you know, they have all these, like, cutesy ways that they say it in those high school parties amongst rich people that are essentially gang rape.
Right,
in that a gang of men is raping a woman.
Right. I mean, that's ultimately what a devil's triangle is.
Exactly.
I mean, right? Like, that's two people having, right?
Yeah,
like,
it's an unconsented threesome as far as I can tell.
Yeah.
But so there is plenty of indication that regardless of whether this particular accusation is true, gang rape, as you might consider it broadly, is a part of life in this world.
Right.
But they keep saying it in an attempt to make everyone be like, no, well, that's ridiculous. He would never commit gang rape.
But he's not in a gang. No, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of Republicans, like, buffoons out there, too, being like, well, he couldn't rape anybody because, like, or he couldn't gang rape anybody because
He's
not in a gang. Like, they're just not processing, like, what that term means as just, like, multiple people.
But because of it, they keep saying it. And so I keep just hearing news with his name and the word gang rape in it all over town. And that includes what Lindsey Graham told this morning, which he said, you know, that the senators who were holding it up, Murkowski and Collins and Flake, wanted to talk to the FBI to talk with witnesses that Dr. Ford named. They want to talk to Miss Ramirez because she refused to talk to the committee. They're going to talk to Mark Judge. Did you ever see, did you ever see Brett Kavanaugh drug women or engage in gang rape? I think it's going to be the focus of it.
Right.
You know, casually check with him, see if he was ever gang raping anyone or using drugs or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, no big deal.
I think we got a real glimpse into like the fever dreams of Lindsey Graham this week.
I know. Too much of a glimpse.
Hate to say it, but I mean, we really, I feel like I'm starting to understand the workings of what's going on up there, rolling around in Lindsey Graham's head.
It's not.
Head.
Yeah, because also on Friday, he opened his new, he made another speech on Friday, where he opened it by saying, I may just be a white man bachelor from South Carolina. And I was like, there's no, this, no speech has ever started with that
I know.
Phrase and then ended with the right sentiment. Like, that's. If you need to announce at the beginning of your speech that you may just be a white man bachelor from South Carolina, and he's always on the edge. My favorite thing about that also is that he calls himself a bachelor too, but like bachelor is exactly what everyone in the South was using as a euphemism for a gay man.
Of course.
Forever.
Yes.
And he keeps fucking saying it.
Yeah.
In any case, that makes me laugh every time.
Yeah.
The GOP is busy trying to blame the Democrats for this. Yeah, anyway, Tom Cotton is out there saying that they're going to investigate Dianne Feinstein's office because they leaked the letter from Blasey Ford.
Great.
Go ahead.
It's too late. Well, and also, I was going to say, you can't uncook that chicken.
Exactly.
But also, it doesn't matter.
Leaking a letter that accuses a Supreme Court nominee of a heinous and violent act.
Right.
Is not a bigger crime than committing that act.
And I don't also believe, is that, unless my interpretation of the events are incorrect, didn't that letter, I know it ultimately got out, but didn't it go into his FBI file after The Intercept reported of its existence?
Yeah.
Not the actual letter.
No.
They didn't have the actual letter. And then there were all of these calls for her to put it into the FBI file. Yeah. I mean, the media did get it at a certain point.
Right.
But I mean, like, it was, we knew of its existence prior to it actually being leaked or printed anywhere by the press.
I guess they mean leaked, like told about the idea of the letter. I don't know.
Right.
They're also going after Blasey Ford's lawyers for apparently not making clear to her that the Senate Judiciary Committee would travel to California to interview her. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. Oh, right. You were having this. That was another moment with, let's go back really quick. Just
the airplanes.
The air travel.
They were trying to convince us that this must be a setup because even though she says she's scared of flying, she flies sometimes.
Right.
They've never heard of a person who tries not to fly for when they don't need to.
Right. My dad, a man who has only been on a few planes in his life because he desperately hates to fly, has flown to Hawaii. He has flown to Cabo. He has, because he realizes if he wants to be a person who does things, then
sometimes
you
got to get on a plane.
Maybe you have to buy some Mexican Xanax
to
get on the plane.
I fly upwards of 10 times a year, and I'm a person who hates flying more than anyone I know.
Oh,
you know?
It's a process. If you don't know how much Lila hates to fly, I mean, it's really one of the hallmarks of her story.
Yeah. It's so true.
The Lila Nordstrom story.
Exactly.
It's her hatred of flying.
Yeah. But do I get on a plane every few months and fly across the country?
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah, because you have to.
Because you have to go there sometimes.
Right. You have to go on vacation to keep yourself sane sometimes.
Exactly. You have to go visit your
family. Your family lives across the country.
You got to go for work sometimes. I mean, there's so many reasons you might need to be on a plane that you just... And if someone wanted to ruin my life, I wouldn't be like, I'd love to get on a plane for that. Like, they're asking Blasey... They're trying to poke a hole in Blasey Ford's story because she was willing to fly to Costa Rica.
Right.
But not to be, terrorized by the Senate Judiciary Committee. Like, okay, guys.
Yeah.
So the thing is, whatever happens here, the confirmation process is only compromised if polling shows them that it's going to lose them the midterms.
Yeah, unless something really bombastic comes out of this investigation.
Right.
But if this investigation
is just
sort of...
Because it's a fake investigation.
Right, it's a fake investigation. And if it just comes out sort of...
A wash.
Those three that held out are going to... vote yes for him
to be dicks.
Just because then they're going to be like, well, we did our due diligence.
Right, exactly.
Like, that's all this is.
Yeah.
It's a fake show of due diligence.
But it's also, I think, the reason that they would agree to this in the first place is because they desperately need to do polling on this. He is not popular.
Oh, no.
This could lose them the Senate.
That's true.
And I think that what really happened is that, you know, Flake's seat is about to go to, you know, is it about could very well could very well lose Democrats, his seat. They're supposed to easily win the Senate back. And yeah. I think what happened was Flake was like, do you guys really want to ram this through and not have any sense of what the consequences are going to be electorally? Like, yeah. we are already probably losing the House. You want to lose the Senate too?
Yeah.
And because I think that there's two things that, you know, if they're going to lose the Senate anyway, they'll just vote for this guy.
Well, part of me thinks that, like, I do think that you're right, that they would, that they want to know sort of like what they're getting themselves into here, because why not?
Right. I think they want to do it anyway, because they're obviously willing to throw out the baby with the bathwater.
I was going
to
say, in the same way that they decided that they were okay voting for Donald Trump, I think they have all made the calculation that if getting a second seat placed on the Supreme Court in these first 2 years is what ultimately causes them to lose the Senate, then that is okay. It's a, sort of a deal with the devil that I think
that's
worth
it to them.
That's worth it to them, that if there's some casualties, okay, but like, let's get this guy in the court for another, you know, 30 years, basically.
I think this is such a mistake, though, because, well, I mean obviously we all think it's a mistake, but I mean, this, I think I said it last week too, this man is not going to be Clarence Thomas. He's not going to go and stay quiet for 30 years. Clarence Thomas got to the court and has not opened his mouth since, and that's why no one remembers how objectionable he is. This man is going to be all up in our business.
Oh, yeah, he's like a vile, he's going to be
a virus that never stops infecting their electoral chances.
And if you think after this that he's ever going to be able, I mean, we already talked about impartiality, but I mean, just like even if he, I don't even think that he would pretend to be impartial.
No, it doesn't seem like it. He wasn't even pretending at his confirmation hearing.
Right, exactly.
Which is the only time that you would absolutely need to pretend
that. And that, honestly, is what I think that the Democrats, while the FBI investigation is going on this week, they have to be getting up to something.
Yeah.
And that, I think, should actually be their main focus. Yeah. Because I think that could also turn some of those moderates. Yeah. I think if you could successfully convince Susan Collins that under no circumstances could this man be impartial after this, then you could maybe make enough headway. I'm not guaranteeing it, but you gotta entertain yourselves for the next week doing something. And that would be my tact.
Yeah.
If I had to give anybody any advice, I would be going with the not able to be impartial tact.
I agree. Because that's the thing that's actually disqualifying as a judge.
Correct.
The rest of this is just behavior they're all willing to accept because they're all assholes.
Right.
But that is a thing that's actually as from
right,
a
that
judicial
they're all
standpoint,
pretending to act like everybody that they've put on the Supreme Court, like at least has the ability to do so.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's the thing that will actually ruin the credibility of the court. Like, they may have prompted a women's movement that they were not hoping for in the process of all of this, and that would be great.
Yeah.
But the thing
I think also,
that actually ruins the court and ruins our, because the court only matters if we decide it matters.
Well, and I also think, you know, well, I 100% agree.
California
can
make laws and challenge the court till the end of time, just like fucking annoying everyone if we want to.
Yeah. You know? The other thing that I think that they are, that the Republicans are probably going to be doing this week, besides potentially doing some polling, is to talking to John Roberts about whether he wants this guy around or not.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I think that there's something to that as well.
I agree.
I mean, because, like, you know, you also don't want a pariah on the court either. I mean, he can sort of vote as he votes, I guess. Like, they're all essentially doing their own thing. But, I mean, like, if the other four of them don't want him there, then, like, that would be, I think, enough of a reason for some of them to maybe, like, rethink that. But
well, yeah, I also think that delegitimizing the court is easy enough. And
well, right, because that's a thing that John Roberts has supposedly always cared about.
Yes.
Like, that's sort of his thing. And, I obviously disagree with more than half the crap that he has done.
Of course.
But there have been times where he has actually shown that.
Right. Well, that's his whole line.
Right,
that's the line that he doesn't like to cross.
Right, exactly. So,
as much as, you know.
Sure.
As he claims.
Sure.
But, I mean, I feel like there are, the 1 week was not about the FBI investigation, in my opinion. It was about polling.
Yeah.
Because the only thing that is going to matter, the only thing that derails this is polling.
Yeah.
And he is not polling well. So they're making a risk calculation regardless. Also, they're giving away Susan Collins' job.
Totally.
You know, it's too bad for her. But she also has the power to not go along with it. So,
yeah,
you know.
She does.
Also, why agree to go along with it if you're going to give away your seat?
Right.
Just don't go along with it.
Yeah.
That's easy.
Just vote no. And then run for governor and you probably win.
Exactly. Like,
don't. You're the Republican who saved us from Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah.
Like that's probably how that's you get reelected. That's the most bipartisan thing.
Right. And Maine is not a Republican state. No. It's just a wacky state.
No.
So, I don't know why she can't think, you know, this party's not serving me right now. And fuck it if I'm the pariah. If I get nothing done for the next 2 years.
And voting no is also potentially how Jeff Flake becomes the next president.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I mean.
Which is clearly what his game is.
I mean, it's something because his game so far has been to not do any of the things that I would do if I were lame duck in his position.
Yeah, right.
But okay.
Yeah.
But in any case, as things continue to get into Looney Tunes land, the most Looney Tune thing that has ever happened emerged today.
Yeah.
And that is that even Kellyanne Conway admitted she's been a victim of sexual assault.
Yeah.
And somehow believes that that shouldn't weigh into our decision about Kavanaugh.
Right. She was doing it while she was defending him. Don't conflate the two. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like her being like, no, even sexual assault victims are voting for Kavanaugh. Right. Don't worry about it.
I'm a victim of sexual assault. And I feel very empathetic.
Hmm.
Huh?
What? To who?
And so Jake Tapper was
to
like,
the,
this is
to
that.
Your rapist?
I know. Jake Tapper said, this is the first time I've ever heard you talk about something personal like that. I'm really sorry you went through that. And then he asked her a question about how, you know, she works for Trump. Donald Trump, who has himself obviously spent, you know, his entire 19 career
women.
Accepting or trying to refute allegations of sexual misconduct. So it was, and then, but then she got really mad at Jake Tapper for asking her such a thing.
Yeah.
Which
when
like
she mentioned it back in 2016,
thing.
Apparently.
Yeah, that's what I didn't realize. She's apparently been talking about it, like, you know, members of the Senate or members of Congress rubbing up against her, sticking their tongues down women's throats who uninvited, who didn't like it. She talked about that like back in 2016. So it was, she didn't go into detail in this interview with Jake Tapper. So we don't know if that is specifically what she's talking about or she was talking about just like a specific instance or whether she was just sort of like reiterating, you know, kind of like the boys club of the United States Congress, because she has talked about that before and that is sexual assault.
And it's
so if that
fair
is
point.
What she was talking about, then that, it could, that could be what she
we
was talking
about. We know Democrats aren't
immune
to this behavior. No, this is part
not.
Of the larger culture of Congress.
Of course. Yeah.
But it is interesting that she was called up to defend Kavanaugh and in the process tried to be like, and I'm a sexual assault victim. And
I believe her. So it's right.
It's not like I don't believe her. I believe she's been sexually assaulted probably worse than a lot of women on the Hill.
Yeah.
Because she runs in circles of bullshit people.
Oh.
But, you know.
Yeah, she's hanging out with the people who would do it.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, it was a weird comment because everyone was like, what does this mean?
Yeah.
Like,
what are we getting at here?
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, this is a side note completely, but I just wanted to mention it. Liz Warren is hinting that she's going to run.
Thank God.
I was like, I'm trying to think of who of the 12,000 people that are thinking of running, I'm hoping actually run. And I know a lot of people are actually not in the Liz Warren camp because they think she's too old and they think, she, you know, she kind of hinted us before and then, you know, backed out or whatever.
Yeah.
The more that I think about it, feel like where the Clinton campaign really went wrong, more so than just policy-wise, is in their lack of ability to explain literally anything to anyone.
Yes.
They could not make a case for their positions on anything because
Correct.
They couldn't tell us what they were.
Right.
And I feel like
without
that
sounding
is,
like a lawyer and giving
exactly.
both sides of every issue.
Exactly. And I think that that is going to be a problem with a lot of the people whose names are in the ring because they are lawyers.
Yeah.
And they don't have a history of explaining these things in simple terms either.
Yeah.
You know, like Kirsten Gillibrand has a history of doing that when it comes to sexual assault and matters that have to do with women's issues, but she doesn't when it comes to the economy.
Yeah.
Kamala Harris is a terrible speaker. She's great as a prosecutor.
Right.
She's great on this committee.
Right. The more hearings they can
throw
at her,
if they can
throw
her in hearings, then great. You know, like Cory Booker doesn't deliver any specifics. Liz Warren is like the person who both delivers specifics and tells you them in a tone you can understand.
Well, that's, I mean, she...
And they don't have anyone else who does that.
Right. Liz Warren sort of like exists as a person and an idea.
Exactly.
because of that very thing. I mean, she sort of like came to like be a name that sort of like looked like a person that they were going somewhere by some YouTube videos of like explaining things to people. Mm-hmm.
Her thing is explaining things to people.
And not have it be boring. It's like, she's like an inspirational explainer, which is a trick.
That's literally the most important thing that you can have running for president. I know that that may not be the most important thing you could have as the president, but you can't be the president if you can't run for president. I'm sick of us pretending that a qualified person who can't run for president should be the president.
Right, exactly.
We got to find someone who can run.
Right.
That's what we found with Obama. He didn't have any ideas yet. He was a child when we started running him, basically, you know? But he was somebody who could articulate a feeling to people.
Exactly. That's what we need. We need We need a, like, a president who we, a candidate who we like as a concept.
Yes, exactly. And that's what I think Liz Warren could be.
I agree.
She could be the Hillary Clinton of the Sanders coalition.
I have thought that.
I mean, I've thought that too. That's, yeah, I mean, I thought that she should have been the running mate for Hillary Clinton. And I was like, I get that they're demographically identical. And I still think that it would have been a smart choice. That's how confident I am in that.
Yeah.
In any case, that's a side note that we just wanted to mention before we talk about how the internet was used as a force for good this week in other ways as well. So we know that Kavanaugh lied about a number of dumb teenage activities.
Well, that's the other thing. We might be able to investigate perjury.
We
too,
should,
by the way, the FBI.
Because
he also he lied about some of the definitions of these things. There's some reports that he may have lied about whether he watched Blasey Ford or not, because he said no, and supposedly that's exactly what he was doing.
Yeah.
So, and we also know that he perjured himself anyway, but regardless, I mean, one of the things that he
If Devil's Triangle is what gets us out of this mess,
it'll be great. I feel like that's the world in which we live now. So, I mean, it might be fitting that that's what it has come to.
Exactly.
Is lying about a sex game.
So, Devil's Triangle is a sex act.
Yeah.
But
not game. I made it sound fun.
Right, yeah.
I mean,
the
it's
Urban Dictionary.
It's fun for a few people involved.
Right, and less fun for some people involved. Urban Dictionary has already updated their definition, however, to this. A made-up game of quarters with three cups arranged in a triangle. The rules are unknown because the inventor of the game, Brett Kavanaugh, could not explain them under oath.
Then their example is, hey, Renata, the woman from the yearbook.
Right.
Want to play Devil's Triangle with Mark and I? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, so good work, Urban Dictionary.
And then there was also another word that he seemed to mischaracterize, if you will.
Boofing.
Boofing.
Which he claimed was barfing.
Yeah. The Urban Dictionary definition is now the act of smirkily perjuring oneself before the United States Senate Judiciary Committee. The real definition is, right below it, the act of inserting drugs into the anus for a longer trip.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Most often occurs at disco biscuit shows by spun-out kids on ketamine, is the rest of that definition. Mm-hmm. So in any case, Urban Dictionary is on it.
Yeah.
Wikipedia was also on it.
Uh-huh.
Everyone...
You should have come up with a better... excuse for that, because it also walked him right into, have you ever drank so much
you barfed? And he had to say yes.
Right.
And then he said he was known for having a weak stomach.
Yeah, oh, that's right. That's what it was. Weak stomach. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then he was just barfing everywhere.
Barfing up a storm. Boofing everywhere.
Boofing everywhere. Oh, man. But in any case, if anyone is familiar with Brett Kavanaugh's version of Devil's Triangle, we'd love to hear about it. It's similar to quarters, apparently.
Yeah.
I don't know
it's
how.
It's going to be all the rage at the parties.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the new party game
he
taking over
He invented the greatest high school party game in history.
Oh, yeah.
Another thing that's questionable about all of this, though, is that he put a lot of this in his yearbook.
Yes.
For posterity.
Yes.
You know what
and
my yearbook quote was? The word Cuba with an exclamation point.
Of course it was.
And while I'm not necessarily proud of that, it's not the cleverest thing I've ever accomplished.
I don't know what mine was.
I'm confident that I didn't admit to any illegal acts.
I know.
Other than maybe traveling to Cuba against U.S. Treasury Department regulation.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
On my yearbook page.
Right.
And
you didn't, with a few of your friends, put the name of a boy and the,
that we raped
the alumnus after it. You didn't do that?
Nope.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, their excuse, by the way, for that was the most insane thing I've ever heard. We just wanted her to know she was one of the guys.
Yep.
Not that we had all slept with her, but that she was just one of the guys. So we all put a yearbook quote, a yearbook thing in our yearbook that said that we were an alumnus of her.
Right.
I believe that.
Some
of these things just didn't like jibe with common sense.
Right.
And that's a problem that he's going to have.
Yeah.
He's not good at thinking on the fly.
No.
And he's going to have to keep thinking on the
fly.
Or
make, I mean, those I don't even think were made up on the fly, because I think he made them up.
Right.
I think
he
had already made them up. He's not,
he knew he was
he's not a good maker-upper.
No. He's not a, he doesn't have an imagination. That's the problem. In any case, this week is going to be insane, because we're going to find out at the end of this that they're going to confirm him anyway, and then we're just going to have this guy somehow on the Supreme Court of the United States.
Well, here we
are. The court that determines things like...
America.
Should women be allowed to choose what to do with their bodies? And should black people be allowed to vote? And a whole number of things.
Gay people get to continue living.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, all the things. All the people that you know and love about are at risk here. Unless you know Brett Kavanaugh.
Yeah, they'll be fine. Rich white people
always
will continue
always come out
come
ahead.
Come out okay.
That's right. And that's the news this week. We'll be back next week, probably a little late next week. We'll probably be back on like Monday or Tuesday next week. But we will talk to you then.
Bye.